So first of all, thank you so much to Rebecca for hosting, for letting us totally take over your living room and then whatever we're in. So really, thank you. I can't even tell. really, really thank you. A very, very special thank you also goes to Tammy Drapkin for her patience and sensitivity and lots of time that she helped me really fine-tuning certain details of the presentation. So really, thank you. Could not have done it without you. Thank you. Yes. Well deserved. Just a few announcements before I begin. The COLE is officially off for the summer. Look how good I am. I'm coming even during my vacation. I'm joking. I decided on the date. But Rabbi Brand will be giving a presentation on explanatory keynote on Tisha B'Av morning, which actually this year is a Sunday. It will be taking place from 9:15 to 1:15. It will actually be taking place at Kins, but you can see it online or listen to it via on the phone also. So if you won't be able to make it out that day for some reason or only be able to go for some of it, you can definitely show up for only a little bit, but you can also access it online. It will be on our website, www.chicagotorah.org. And the information for the call-in number and probably the passcode or whatever is all going to be on the website. So please take a look at that. I'm sure it will be very meaningful. He interrupted his own preps today to talk to me about certain things on the share, so I appreciate his help as well. Not to mention the help of my husband, who basically did a lot also. So thank you to everyone. The other event that you guys should all have in your hands, just to give you a little bit of background, for those of you who know that NILI is Chicago Institute for Women's Learning, we really are a branch of the YU Torah Mitzion Kollel. There are basically two events that the COLE runs throughout the year to enable it to do everything that it does in the community, the major event being our annual dinner in February, but the other major event being the annual summer event that takes place at the end of the summer. This year, as you see on your little postcards, the annual summer event will be taking place at the Chicago History Museum on August 30th. It's a Sunday evening. I think it begins at 6:45 or something like that. It's a really nice social hour and usually a very nice venue. Good food, not much speeches, to tell you the truth. It's a really, really pleasant evening. So please, you know, we'd love to see you there showing your support. Do you mind just signing in, please? Thank you. And, you know, we'd love to have you join us. And finally, thank you to all the women in the room who are actively involved in the COLE and in NILI as active stakeholders, involved in, you know, whatever capacity you're involved. We really couldn't do everything we do in the community without you. So I really want to give our sincere and heartfelt thank you for everything that you've done for us in the past and that we know that you'll continue doing for us in the future. Now to actually begin. You know, looking around the room, I think we all see here again, in addition to the crowd that we saw at part two, that there are many different presentations, I should say representations, of different methods of hair covering. And it's just, you know, really, really nice that we can all come together. Everyone's journey in Shmirat HaMitzvot is so individual, so personal. It's on. Thank you. I appreciate it. Everyone's journey in Shmirat HaMitzvot is so personal, so individual. And yeah, it's really nice that we are able to all come together, actively embracing our Jewish heritage. Like I said last time, and it will be a little bit repetitive for those of you who weren't here last time, I think it's important to reiterate this as well. This is obviously a very personal and emotionally charged topic. And we must ensure that no one is or should be judging anyone else based on their practices, based on, you know, anything, right? No judgments. Everyone does their own thing. The purpose of this series called Covering the Sources on Covering Hair is just that. It's to be informative. It's to cover the sources, to make anyone who's interested aware of the sources, the background, etc. The goal is not to change anyone's behaviors, but rather to arm each and every one of us with a greater and deeper understanding of the halachot involved in this important mitzvah, and hopefully some chizuk as well. Melanie Griffith, some of you may know her, I don't remember her at all, but Melanie Griffith, I'm totally dating myself, I guess, on the younger end, but, in her 1988 film, I've heard of her name, does that help? In her 1988 film, Working Girl, famously declared, "You want to be taken seriously, you need serious hair." See? There you're filling me in. As Rose Weitz, professor of sociology and women's studies at Arizona State University, and the author of a book that I was supposed to bring and was on my bag and managed, I guess, to slip it to the floor, but it's called Rapunzel's Daughters, What Women's Hair Tells Us About Women's Lives. Fascinating. As Rose Weitz explains, hair always carries social messages. Quote, even in communities where women must cover their hair in public, hair retains great symbolic power. That requirement itself testifies to the erotic and moral significance vested in hair. And Rose Weitz, during her sociological study, interviewed many, many women, not, you know, so much that it's like thousands, but, you know, almost 100 women. And she learned from many of the women that she interviewed that, quote, changing our hair changes our identity because our hair and our appearance more generally is central to how we see ourselves and are seen by others. Many of her interviewees actually changed their hairstyles pretty drastically, at least once in their lifetimes. It was really interesting. They always, almost always did it to reflect a change in their lives, whether it be a change that had already happened. So, for example, one woman following a really bad breakup with a boyfriend decided to cut her hair to signify, you know, this is a new me, to kind of give her the inner strength to persevere and to get through it and to get over him and move on, right? I was this way when I was with my boyfriend, so let me get a haircut so that I view myself as a different person and now I can move on with my life. So we see that people, you know, change their hairstyle based on changes that they've made in the past. And she also mentions a number of women who change their hairstyle for something that they want to change in their future, that they hope will change in their future. So one example is someone who's graduating college and is looking to land her first job and doesn't want to be that, you know, give over the image of a young, carefree college girl, but rather wants to look mature and professional. And so she gets a haircut with a new hairstyle in order to promote herself in the new, you know, with the new aura that she wants to promote to help her land that job. And we see very interestingly that many women view their hair as a way of expressing themselves, as a way of expressing their identities, to the point that when we want to, or when our identities have already been changed, or when we want to change them, right, many women try to change their hairstyles as a reflection as that. And I thought that that was really interesting because when my husband was speaking to his Rebbe from YU, or Rosenzweig, he shared an idea that shows us that covering our hair really runs along those same lines. Rav Rosenzweig explains that one of the aspects of hair covering, not the understanding and not the only aspect, but one of the aspects of hair covering is enabling a woman to reflect a different image now that she is married. And, in other words, that covering one's hair is a halacha, and this is so Rav Rosenzweig, but covering one's hair is a halachic manifestation of her change in status from a single woman to a married woman. And I just thought that was very interesting. I actually heard this from a Rosenzweig, you know, a few weeks ago, and I only read this piece of Rose Weitz's study several days ago, and I just thought it was so interesting how the sociological aspect of hair and hairstyle really matched what halacha is trying to get across through the requirement to cover our hair. Again, like the ability for our hair, or what we do with it, again, to reflect who we are is really one of the most powerful aspects of our hair. And like I said, it became clear both through Rose Weitz's sociological studies and through the halacha, and something that the halacha recognizes as well. We're going to break up the shiur part, which we're up to now, into four distinct units. You can see the titles actually on your source sheets. The first one we're going to do is Seir Be'isha Erva, which we'll translate in a moment, and Zvarim Shebek Dusha. Again, we'll translate all that in a moment. The next page you'll see how much to cover up, how much hair has to be covered. The middle of the third page, it's keeping it under wraps or under wigs, right? What's the best way to cover hair, shaitels or scarves or hats? And finally, on page 5, tresses trending today, current practice for those women who don't cover their hair, etc. And then we'll have a wrap-up. As you see, there's a lot to learn, so I will just go forward. For those of you who were at part one or listened to part one of the recording, you might remember that we discussed one primary Gemara on the subject of hair covering. And that was the Gemara that discussed the two-tiered law that discusses covering hair. The first level is Dat Moshe, the Deoraita level, the level of covering hair that comes from the Torah, bless you. And then the second level is Dat Yehudit, the level that's based upon contemporary practice of women, you know, Jewish Orthodox women. And we discussed that it's really a two-tiered law that each comes along with its own dinim, each comes along with its own details, etc. And this week we're going to discuss the implications of that law. The implications of that din, right, the din that we have to cover our hair, which we discussed last week, that din has implications for us in all these areas that we've discussed. The first din that we're going to discuss is actually the second primary Gemara on the subject. And this Gemara, like I kind of said, ascribes another law to the subject of hair covering, and it's actually a law that's the result of the previous two laws that we discussed last time. So we had Dat Moshe and Dat Yehudit, and that leads to the Seir V'Isha Erva concept that we're going to learn in a moment. But before we even get there, I want to give you some context of what the Gemara is discussing in general. The Gemara is discussing the requirement for Dvarim Shebekdusha. Dvarim Shebekdusha are things like blessings and prayers, right? Words that are said in holiness, words that we use in order to communicate with God. And the Gemara discusses or tells us that Dvarim Shebekdusha must be said in an appropriate environment. That when we are, you know, blessing God or praying to Him, we have to be in an environment that is conducive to focusing on spirituality or to thinking spiritual thoughts. We cannot be in an environment that will distract us in any way from the spirituality we're supposed to be focusing on. So, for instance, and this is an example brought in another Gemara, but for instance, we are not allowed to say any blessings or prayers in the bathroom. We're not allowed to say any blessings or prayers in the presence of a dirty diaper or any other source of a bad smell, because that's just not an appropriate environment where we can really be, you know, focusing our thoughts on, you know, in the right direction. Some other halacha regarding this appropriate environment for Dvarim Shebekdusha are that neither a man nor a woman can say a blessing or a prayer in front of an unclothed person. Whether that person is of the same sex or the opposite sex, it doesn't matter. So it's just important to recognize that this is like an equal opportunity halacha here. It's not just that we're worried about what men are going to say or think, and therefore we have to do everything in order to protect ourselves or them or whatever it is. It really goes both ways. A woman is not allowed to say a bracha in front of a naked woman. And a man is not allowed to say a bracha in front of a naked man. And obviously it goes the opposite way. We can imagine that is much more distracting. This is all because there are certain things that are meant to be kept private, and there's an inyan of privacy, of retaining that privacy for Dvarim Shebekdusha. Things that are meant to be kept private must retain that privacy and cannot be exposed, because they serve to distract us from that which we are supposed to be focusing on. Okay, now we can get to the first Gemara, which is in source number one, the Gemara in Brachot Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Tefach V'Isha Erva. So the Gemara begins by saying that Rabbi Yitzchak says, a tefach, which is really a hand's breadth, or like the width of a fist when you put your hand like this, is considered to be erva, is considered to be nakedness. In other words, something that is private that should not be exposed. Okay, we're all aware that every single person has parts of their body that are considered naked when exposed. Those things should be kept private. It has nothing to do with being wrong, and it has nothing to do with being dirty. It is just about privacy. And Rabbi Yitzchak says that a tefach of a person, of a woman's private parts, if more than a tefach is exposed, and that is considered to be erva, that is considered to be nakedness. Limai, in what situation is he referring? Because the Gemara is going to say if he's referring to, you know, ilema le'astukuleba, if he's referring to a man who is gazing upon a woman in order to seek arousal, then we know that everything's erva, even her pinky finger. What does it say? V'ha amar Rav Sheshet, lama mana hakatzav tachshitin shebachutz im tachshitin shebifnim. At the end of Bamidbar, we have a pasuk that tells us about the earrings that a woman used to wear and the vaginal rings of some sort that the ancient women used to wear, and it's told to us in the same pasuk. And Rav Sheshet says, why does the pasuk tell us about these external jewels and the internal jewels in the same pasuk? Lomar lach kol mistakal be'esva ketana shel isha ki'ilu mistakal b'makom haTorah. To teach us that anyone who looks at even a woman's pinky finger, but we're not just talking about glancing. Obviously, that's okay. We don't walk around with our hands in gloves, right? This is talking about really gazing in order to be aroused. If a man, is looking at a woman's pinky finger in order to be aroused from it, it's as if he's looking at the vaginal area. That's how bad it is. So then, therefore, Rabbi Yitzhak saying that tefach be'isha erva, Rabbi Yitzhak saying that only more than a tefach is a problem, can't be talking about a man who's gazing, because we know that even a pinky finger is problematic in that case. Rather, ella be'ishta ulekriyat shema. So the Gemara kind of limits this statement to being in the realm of his wife when he's saying kriyat shema. When is it a problem to see more than a tefach of a woman's uncovered parts of her body? For a man to see this amount, when it's his wife during Kriyat Shema. So even if a man, Miss Minyan, for some reason, and is at home saying Kriyat Shema, he cannot say it if more than a tefach, a hand's breadth, of her erva, of her nakedness, is showing. Amar Rav Chista, and now we have more things that are considered erva. Amar Rav Chista, shok bi'isha erva. Rav Chista adds that a thigh of a woman is also considered basu erva. Shene amar, and now he quotes two psukim in Yeshayahu, gale shok over naharot. He's talking about, I believe it's when Bnei Yisrael are being exiled and they're going to have to reveal their thighs as they're crossing the rivers. Uktev, and then in the very next pasuk it says, tagel erva tzcha v'gam ter'eh herbatzcha. That your erva, your nakedness will be revealed and your disgrace will be seen. And so the Gemara learns from the juxtaposition of these two psukim that the shok is going to be revealed in the first pasuk and her erva is going to be revealed in the second pasuk, that the shok and the erva must be the same thing. Yeshayahu speaks in parallelism all the time. So this makes sense also just based on the pshat understanding of the pasuk. Yes?
In that context, would shok, like, is that where the question of the shok calf?
No, thigh. Shok does not mean calf. The area below the knee in Chazal's lingo is regel, raglayim. It refers to feet and everything until the knee. Okay, so Amar Shmuel. Now Shmuel is going to add something else. Amar Shmuel kol be'isha erva. Shmuel adds that a voice of a woman is considered nakedness. And Amar in Shir Hashirim, when the beloved is when the dode is praising his beloved and discussing her beauty, ki kolech areich umareich na'ava, because your voice is sweet and your appearance is pleasant. The Gemara then goes on later to discuss. This is not talking about a woman's speaking voice. Obviously, it's really talking about her singing voice. That a singing voice is considered erva. And finally, Amar Rav Sheshan, and this is really what we were trying to get to in the first place. Amar Rav Sheshet, Seir Be'isha Erva. Rav Sheshet explains that hair, the hair of a woman is erva. Shene Amar, another pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Sa'arich Ke'eder Izim. That the dode tries to praise his beloved's hair by comparing it to a flock of sheep. Beautiful. How on earth is this considered to be praise? So Rashi actually explains it's not really comparing her hair to the wool of the sheep or the goats, because that would be a little strange. But rather, the continuation of the pasuk is that Sarich Keiter Izim Hagoshim, something from the mountain. So he's explaining that it's not the actual wool; it's really the sheen. When looking from afar, if you see goats descending a mountaintop, their white wool reflects the sun and creates a very pretty sheen, a very pretty shine, and that's what he's comparing her hair to. Like your hair has a beautiful sheen, just like the white wool of goats ascending the mountaintop from afar has a pretty sheen. Okay, very interesting. It makes a little bit better. Okay, so basically the Gemara here lists four things that are considered erva. The first thing is considered is tefach be'isha erva. Tefach of what? A measurement of what? Right? We know that it's a measurement that's a hand's breadth. I mean, the Rush just explicitly states, which I think I alluded to anyway. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak tefach be'isha erva ha be'acheret v'ha be'ishra l'kriyat shema v'davar sharagil l'hiyot mechusa be'isha. Right? The tefach of something that's erva in a woman is only when it's a tefach of something that is usually covered. So seeing a tefach of, you know, her palm is not a problem. Seeing a tefach of her face is not a problem. We're talking about the parts of the body that are usually covered. This is not a Sharon Sneha, so we're not going to go into the details. But a tefach of anything that is usually covered, says the Rush, is considered to be erva. Number two, so that's one. Tefach of a usually covered place is considered erva. The thigh of a woman is considered erva. That means the knee and above. Three, kol be'isha erva, her singing voice. And four, her hair. The Shulchan Aruch brings this down the halacha. The Shulchan Aruch in source number 3, v'hamistakel afilu be'etzva katana shel isha v'nikaven lehanot mimena, a man who looks at even the pinky of a woman and with the intention of deriving pleasure from this woman, ki'ilu nistakel b'veit ha-toref perush erva, it's as if he's looking at the vaginal canal, meaning it's erva shala. The asur lishma kol erva oler otzera, and it is forbidden for a man to hear her singing voice and or to see her hair. So it's very clear la halacha that according to the Shulchan Aruch, a man is not allowed to see a woman's hair. What's interesting about this entire thing is that if you just listen to the Gemara and the way that the Shulchan Aruch is explaining it, it seems like Seir Beish Erva, all hair of a woman seems to be Erva, but we know that that's not true. Right, we know that lahalach, we don't paskin that single women have to walk around with their hair covered. So what does this mean? Quite interestingly, the Rambam seems to take it at face value. If you look at source number 4, the Rambam says, Lo yahalchu b'no Yisrael pruei rosh. Bashok, Jewish women should not walk around in the marketplace with their heads uncovered. Acha pnuya v'acha isha ish. Whether they're single or married. Very interesting, right? The Rambam really seems to understand that Seir Beisha Erva is a general statement. All hair of all women is Erva, and therefore it should never be seen whether the woman is married or single. There are therefore some Sfaradiyot, specifically Timaniyot, who do always walk around with their hair in braids in order to, you know, hold like this Rambam. Because again, we said that Prue Rosh means uncovered. The other way is to understand it is disheveled because they're single. They don't cover, they dishevel it. They want to make sure that it's not disheveled and it's in braids. So there are Timaniyot who do that. I think someone also quoted to me something that, like, Rav Avadya Yosef said that if single women or girls are learning Torah, they should also cover their hair. It's very interesting. This definitely could be explained maximalistically, that all hair of all women is considered erva. However, there are those who interpret this Rambam differently. Because if you notice, he doesn't say achat betula v'achat ishat ish. He says achat pnuya v'achat ishat ish. A betula is a virgin, a single woman who has never been married. A pnuya is a single woman who could have already been married, i.e. a divorcee or a widow. So there are those who kind of limit this Rambam and say that he's not really referring to single women, he's really referring to divorcees and widows who need to keep their hair covered once they've been married. They have to continue keeping their hair covered. So there is even a way to understand the Rambam himself as not being so maximalistic. There is a way to understand him minimalistically as well. However, other than the Rambam's maximalistic version, almost every single Rishon interprets this Gemara as being limited to women who cover their hair. Why? Because like I said before, and I'll say it again, this is not the reason why we cover our hair. This is a consequence of the din that we learned last time that a woman has to cover her hair. Right? The Gemara in Ketubot already explained the din that a woman has to cover her hair. This Gemara is a reaction, it's a result of that din. Because a woman has to cover her hair, it's considered one of those places that is private, that is covered, and therefore it's considered erva. Therefore, for betulot, who walk around without their hair covered, right? Single girls can walk around without their hair covered. It's not considered erva because it's not considered a private place. And this is exactly what the Rush explains in source number 5. Amar Rav Sheshet Seir Beisha Erva Benashim Shedarchan Lachaso. Rav Sheshet explains that hair of a woman is considered erva only for those women for whom it's their way to cover it. Sa'aran, for whom it's their way to cover their hair. Aval bitulo chadarkan leilech pruo, right? That's talking about married women because it's their way to cover their hair. But bitulo, whose way is to walk with their hair exposed, mutar lekro kenegdan, you can say kriyat shema in front of them because their hair is not considered erva.
Yeah, I just want to clarify something that you said. We don't have to cover our hair because this Gemara says that our hair is erva.
Right.
The Gemara already said we have to cover
exactly.
Our hair. And this is kind of...
This is the consequence of that din. Because our hair is one of those places that has to be covered, just like our shok, therefore it's considered erva. Right? We discussed, erva means nakedness.
Right.
Erva means exposure of a private place. And because our hair, based on the din ketubot, is considered to be, on a married woman only, a private place, therefore it's considered erva, and he can't say kriyat shema in front of this being exposed.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Okay,
so this is not at all the reason for the din. It's actually a consequence of the din.
Okay.
It's a result of it. Yes.
Since we made a distinction between the something that's usually covered and erva, like we said that like something that's usually covered, and then we talked about the different places.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so could that mean like something like it's almost undoing it? It's like something like someone's shok that a man wouldn't see on a woman until they're married, and then he's used to seeing it. Then he should be able to say Kriyat Shema in front of her because it's not usually covered.
So that's the whole point. The whole point is that for Kriyat Shema, it's Dvarim Shebikdusha. right? For it's not that a man's not allowed to see the woman's show.
No,
of course he is, his wife.
Good,
but that's the whole point. Meaning, the man, this is not, right, that's the whole thing. It's not just about arousal. It's about, everybody is talking about, in Dvarim Shebik Dusha, we have to create the appropriate environment. And the appropriate environment for Dvarim Shebik Dusha is one in which we can focus on spiritual thoughts. Hopefully the man is going to be attracted to his wife, but no matter how many times he's seen her shoke, it should still be arousing to him. But that's not even the point. And the truth is that the Rishonim and even Achronim differentiate between his wife and other women. They say that Tefach B'Isha Erva is only talking about his wife. Why? Because for another woman, he can't even see a Tefach.
Exactly.
Right? For a husband to see his wife's, a Tefach is not going to do anything. Right? Or it's not going to do enough to warrant the situation inappropriate for Dvarim Shebik Dusha. And therefore, for his own wife, he can see up to a tefach. More than that is a problem. But for any other woman, even less than a tefach is considered to be a problem. Right? We don't talk about tefachim when we're measuring the amount of our shok that has to be covered. Our entire shok has to be covered in public. But for our husband, for Kriyat Shema, we're a little bit more lenient because of your very comment. Yeah.
So if she doesn't cover her hair, is
good
that
question.
No longer terrible?
Good question. It's a very good question. We're going to see that that's going to be a machloket. The classic way of understanding it is that it doesn't necessarily tie into what she actually does. It ties into her status as a married woman. Right? Just like a shok, well, you can't necessarily say this, but a shok is considered to be objective erva, meaning whether or not she covers it, it is considered to be erva because it's supposed to be covered, and it's because that's by nature arousing also. Sayer is a little bit different because if women walk around single without their hair covered, then obviously it doesn't have the same arousing nature as a shok that should always be covered, right? There has to be a difference. If we don't require a woman to cover her hair until a certain point in her life, then it obviously has a different status than something that we do require her to cover her entire life, as long, you know, from the moment that she gets old enough for her to be considered no longer a child, right? Is that? But we're going to see that lahalacha, there are two different opinions regarding your very question, and we'll see that in a moment. Let's just see the Shulchan Aruch first in source number 6. The Shulchan Aruch says basically what we have just been discussing, but brings it lahalacha. Seir shel isha shedarcha lechasoto asor lekro kenegdo. The hair of a woman whose way is to cover it, it is forbidden to say kriyat shema in front of it. Haga, the Rama comments, afilu ishto. This is even talking about his wife, obviously for other women, even for his own wife. Aval, and here it differentiates between the women whose darka it is to cover, and betulot, aval betulot shedarkan leilech pruot rosh, but virgins who are single women who generally walk around with their hair uncovered, mutar, then you can definitely say kriyat shema in front of them, which is probably why in shul, they're, you know, single women do not have to cover, single girls and women do not have to cover their hair. However, your question is a very good question, because there are the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Rosh, talks about darka mekasot. Right, it's the way, right, they have chosen, it's their way to cover their hair. So what exactly does that mean? Does that mean only if they have chosen to cover their hair it becomes erva? Or does it mean that a married woman is considered to be within the realm of a woman whose way is to cover their hair, whether or not they do, she should be, and therefore it is considered erva, right? That's the basic question that's asked. This is the, I guess, the two primary sources on this topic are two 19th to 20th century poskim. One is the Mishneh Berurah, written by who's known today as the Chafetz Chaim, because he also wrote another sefer called the Chafetz Chaim, but his real name, by the way, is Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan. He is one opinion that's going to be the Mishneh Berurah in source number 7, and the second opinion is going to be in the Aruch HaShulchan, which was written by Rabbi Chil Michal Epstein. Both of them 19th to 20th centuries who were exposed to the practice of women not covering their hair. So how do we deal with this din today when people don't cover their hair? And like I said, this is a machloket. What is the Mishneh Berurah's opinion in source number 7? Shedar kalachasoto, that her way is to cover it. The afilu im ein dar kalachasoto rak bashok velo babayit. Even if this woman generally only covers her hair in the marketplace but not at home, uvachatzer mikol makom bichal ervahi, it is still considered to be erva. So even if he's saying kriyat shema at home, even if she never covers her hair at home, it's still considered to be erva. Vechulei alma, according to everyone, afilu babayit. The asur sham the krot negda im nigalek tzat mehen, and therefore even at home, if a little bit is revealed, it's still considered a problem.
She said everyone agrees on what?
That a woman who generally does not cover her hair at home, her hair is still considered erva for her husband in terms of kriyat shema, even when they're at home. V'da od de'afilu im derach isha zo v'chaverotah v'oto makom leilech b'giloi harosh. And you should know, says the Mishnah Berurah, that even if her way and the way of her friends is to walk around with their hair uncovered, bashok, even in public, kederach haprutzot, right? So he says, like the ways of the immodest women, asor, it's still considered forbidden to say kriyat shema in front of her. Ukemo le'inyan giloi shoka, to asor b'chol gavni. And he compares the seyer being erva to the status of the shoks being erva, meaning regardless of whether a woman covers her shok, it's considered erva, because this is what a lot of the achronim refer to as objective erva. It is erva regardless of how you treat it. So too, the seyer is erva regardless of how you treat it. Because according to the din that we discussed last week, they have to cover their hair. Right, and this is an Isser Darabanan, as we spoke about last week. And we know that all Jewish women who believe or who are strong in Dat Moshe have been careful about this for, you know, all of history, the adata, and until now, bechlal erva hiva asor lekrot kenagdan. And so the Mishnah Berurah says unequivocally that today, regardless of a woman's practice, her hair is still considered erva. It seems that the Mishnah Berurah views this statement of seir v'isha erva as kind of like automatically clicking in as soon as she gets married. Meaning, as soon as a woman gets married, her hair is considered to be a part of her body that she should cover. And therefore, regardless of whether she actually does cover it, it's still considered to be a part of the body that should be covered, and therefore it is considered erva in this situation. And for that reason, a man cannot say Kriyat Shema in front of her, or Kiddush, or Havdalah, or, you know, any really, it's not just Kriyat Shema, I forgot to specify that, but we're talking about anything, Shemona Esrei, Kiddush, Havdalah, anything. The Aruch HaShulchan, though, has a radically different approach. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, says as follows. He says, "Va'ata bo v'nitzveach al pritzut zareinu v'avonotinu harabim." He said, "Come, let's cry about the immodesty that has, you know, proliferated in our generation because there are many sins." Shezes shanim rabot shenifritzu b'not Yisrael b'avon zeh. That it has been many years that the women have, you know, basically gone without their hair covers. V'holchok b'gulei harosh. Right, they go without their hair covered. And every, no matter how much the rabbis have cried about this, it hasn't helped. Right, it hasn't done anything. And now the issue has really spread that many women walk around with their hair uncovered, just like the single women. Right, woe is to us that this has happened in our day. However, despite the fact that this is against the law, right, despite the fact that this is wrong, despite the fact that we have to cry about how sinful we are, this might have an implication today in terms of the din of erva. Right, so it's very important to understand what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying. He is saying the din applies as is. There is no change to the din. However, as a result of contemporary society, the din of erva might be slightly changed. What does he say? Ledina, nira shemutar lanu lehipalel ulevarech neged roshehan hamigulot. It seems that because this idea of, or this practice of women walking with their hair uncovered has become so, popular amongst the Jewish women, unfortunately, as he says, it seems that we can now daven in front of them and bench and see brachon in front of them, in front of their uncovered hair. Kevan sha'ata ruban holchokach, because so many women do this, vehevi kimekomon hamagulim begufa. So it's no longer considered mekomon hamachusim, it's no longer considered a cover part of your body, now it's considered a revealed part of your body. Everything we mentioned that is erva, like we said, is something that is private, something that is not meant to be exposed. It's not talking about something which is usually exposed. And that's why for a single woman who always walks around with her hair uncovered, we're not worried. We're not concerned about saying Kriyat Shema in front of them, Deleka Herhor, because it doesn't lead to, you know, arousing thoughts. Ad Kan L'Shono, so until now he's been quoting the Ravya. V'kevan Shazlenu Gam HaNesuot Kein, Right? He's talking about the betulo. Because we're used to seeing their hair, therefore it's not a problem. Well, today, says the Aruch HaShulchan, even though it's not right, practically, they don't either, even the married women. Mimila dileka lehihar. So therefore, it no longer causes arousing thoughts either, because men see women's hair, even married women's hair, all the time. So that's the famous machloket between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan in terms of how the din of erva specifically is manifest today. Is it affected by common practice or is it not? Right. So the Mishnah Berurah holds that it's not, that automatically her hair becomes erva when she's married, regardless of what practice she chooses to do when she gets married. But the Aruch HaShulchan says practically we see married women's hair all the time, so it's no longer considered a private covered part of her body.
Say that the same thing today about a shok?
No, definitely not. No. Because there's a difference, like we said before. Good question. Good question. And that therein lies the major difference that we're going to get to later, that Rav Moshe explicitly states, that there's a very big difference between hair and every other part of the body that's usually covered. Why? Because basically, he says, the fact that a woman can, according to the Gemara, be uncovered at home, right? Potentially with other men there. Okay, the fact that a betula can walk around with their hair uncovered shows us that hair has a different status to begin with in terms of its inherently private nature, right? As Rav Moshe says, it's almost like the expectation of her, like her shift in status, comes along with this expectation that our hair will be covered. Therefore, it becomes erva. It's not this inherent objective erva that's exists from the birth of a child. It's only something that exists when she gets married. By definition, if a betula can walk around without her hair covered, that has to be very different than a shok that even a betula cannot walk around showing. Right. So this is where the Achronim really differentiate between the objective erva of a shok and the seyar, which has a totally different status. Good question.
So which do we follow today?
The Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
It's a very good question. The Mishnah Berurah has become a generally accepted code. The Aruch HaShulchan is also, he was also a major posek. I would say ask your local Orthodox rabbi. I would say that there's definitely room for a man. I'll tell you where it comes lahalacha. If a man is at his Shabbos table, right, technically Kiddush is Dvarim Shebikdusha, and there are women sitting around his Shabbos table who aren't covering their hair, then one would say it's much better to rely on the Aruch HaShulchan than embarrass anyone, obviously. Right? So that is 100% an area that I would say, for sure, 100% rely on the Aruch HaShulchan. What you do in your personal practice, or your husband's personal practice, is not what I'm coming to tell you to do. So that's, this is a machloket. They're two very reliable poskim. Yeah?
Mishnah Berurah kind of talks in, extremes, where this was always our practice and we all knew this.
Mm-hmm.
But
is that extreme or is that truth? I mean, Jewish women always covered their hair.
I thought that when we went through some of these sources where it said, we all know that they always covered their hair. I thought that there was still a question. Was it covering their hair or covering their head? Or was it this? Was it
this? He's talking about head. He's talking about head. Meaning he's talking about the practice, but including Dat Yehudi. That's a question of how much hair, and we'll get to that. How much is actually covered? But he's saying the idea that the women covered their heads has always been done. How much? We'll get to in a moment, actually, next. Okay. Yes.
Excuse me if this is off top or on topic, but is there precedent to be set for the way that Tara Mishpacha is conducted today in the counting, with common practice editing or adjusting what's considered halacha?
I don't understand your question. What do you mean with the counting?
I probably should just ask you.
Sure, absolutely.
Because I don't feel confident.
That's totally fine. Not a problem. Okay. So moving on to the next question. Okay, good. Moving on to the next question. Now that we've discussed the status of a woman's hair once the din that we discussed last week is to cover it, right, how much hair does she have to cover, right? We discussed last time that there's this Dat Moshe requirement to cover her head and a Dat Yehudit requirement to cover more. What is that Dat Yehudit requirement? We're going to see that also this is subject to Machloket. The only Rishon who even discusses how much hair has to be covered, the only one, very interestingly, is the Rashba. If you look in source number 9, V'hada amar Rabbi Yitzchak tefach b'isha erva, v'okimna b'ishto b'kriyat shema. Right, when Rabbi Yitzchak explains that tefach b'isha erva, that a hand's breadth of a woman's woman's private parts of her body are considered erva, and limited that to his wife in kriyat shema, pirish harayvet zeh lishono, de'efshar daka mimakom tzenua shava, right, as we discussed, this is only referring to a private part of her body, Rabbi Chista leneimar deshok beisha makom tsanua, right? And that's why, building upon that, Rav Chista explained that the shok, the thigh of a woman, is considered to be a private place and therefore erva, the erva who, the afilu legabe bala, even for her husband, afal pi she'eino makom tsanua beish, even though a man's thigh is not considered to be erva, a woman's thigh is aval, right? So we're talking about all the things that are erva, aval paneha. Yadeha, v'ragleha, her face, her hands, her legs and feet, v'kol dibura, and the voice of her speaking voice, she'enu zemer, that's not singing, u'se'ara michutz l'tzamta, and the hair that falls outside of her kerchief, she'enu mikaseh, that she doesn't normally cover, ein choshishin lahem mipnei shehu ragil bahem v'lo tarid. We're not concerned about her face. We're not concerned about her hands. We're not concerned about her feet and her leg below her knee. We're not concerned about her talking voice or the hair that falls from her scarf that she doesn't usually cover, because she's used to it and won't be distracted by it. So that's the Rashba already telling us that one can leave hair down from a scarf. Okay, how much? Doesn't touch upon it. And this is going to be a machloke between three different interpretations of the Rashba. First, the Rama brings us down the halacha, and then we'll get to the different interpretations. Actually, skip to source number 11. The Shulchan Aruch, it's a repeat of source number 6, when he says, She'er she'isha she'darcha l'chasoto asor l'kro kenegdo, right, the hair of a woman whose way it is to cover it, you can't read Kriyat Shema in front of it, even his wife. Aval betulo she'darcha l'lech pro rosh, but single girls whose way it is to walk with their hair uncovered, it's allowed. What does the Rama add for things that are allowed, like a betula, like a single woman? V'hu hadin ha'se'arot shanashim she'rigilin latzeit michutz latzamtan. And this is the law for the hair of women that they're used to leaving outside their kerchief. So here the Rama brings the halacha, what the Rashba says, that whatever hair the woman is used to leaving outside her kerchief is not considered erva, and a man can say Kriyat Shema in front of that hair. Now, how much are the Rashba and Rama talking about? So the first Acharon to really deal with this is the Maharam al-Shakar. His name is Rav Moshe ben Yitzhak al-Shakar. He lived in the 15th to 16th centuries. He was born in Spain but exiled in 1492, and he ended up as a Dayan in Cairo and ultimately lived in Yerushalayim. He corresponded with the Gedolei HaDor of his lifetime. What does he say? He says, She'ela sha'alti mimeni hayidid, im yesh lachush le'elu hanashim shenahagu legalot se'aran michutz l'tzamtan lehetna opo. Someone asked me if we have to be concerned about those women who leave hair outside of their scarf, lehetna opo. Not practically, not by accident, in order to look pretty. That's what he says. They leave hair out in order to look pretty. Tshuva, ibra de'ein beit mechosh le'oto se'ar klal. The answer is, since there's no beit mechosh, there's no arousal for that hair, kevan shenagu legaloto, because she practices, like the way that she practices is to reveal it, v'afilu l'kriyat shema, even for kriyat shema, right, because it has the same status as panaha yadeha v'raglaha. We can, a man can say kriyat shema when he sees a woman's face, right, and therefore the hair that comes out of her kerchief, says the Maharam al-Shakar, has the same exact status as her hands and face, and therefore it's even okay for kriyat shema. And the statement, the hair of a woman is considered erva, lo miyare ela b'seir shaderech ha'isha l'chasoto. That only applies to the hair that a woman is used to covering. Yes.
What year did you say this was?
16th century. 15th to 16th century. Yes. So the Maharam, he then goes on to say, actually, and I didn't quote this inside, but he then goes on to say that if we consider every single last hair of a woman to be erva, then, you'd have to speak about our eyebrows and our eyelashes and the hair on our arms and the, hair on our legs, if it's there, right? So he says that therefore the Rashba couldn't be talking about, right, or the Gemara couldn't be talking about every last hair. It has to be talking about the hair that we're used to covering. We're not used to covering our eyebrows. We don't have to cover our eyebrows, obviously. But the hair that we cover on our head, we're used to covering. It's considered erva, but the hair that comes out of our scarf, we're not used to covering, just like the other hairs on our body. The Maharam al-Shakar doesn't give a measurement. And so there are those who practice to leave hair outside of the hat that covers their head, which is the Dat Moshe requirement. And he doesn't give a length, and so some people just let their hair grow. Right, and they don't necessarily cut it or anything like that. They cover their hair and they let their hair out. That appears to be based on this Maharam al-Shakar, who just says whatever they leave out is okay. The Chatam Sofer comes along and gives us the completely opposite interpretation of the Rashba. He's also interpreting the Rashba, he just does it differently. We're not going to read this entire thing inside. But he says, Miyatei HaRashba, Shekata Benesu O'nami, Otan Sarot HaRegilo Latzei Chutz Latzantan, V'Habal Ragil Bahen Lo Mitarid HaBaal, right? If there's hair that's coming out of the Rashba says that if hair is coming out of the scarf, then it doesn't distract him. Mutar lahabal lekro kriyat shema kenegdav. Therefore, he can say kriyat shema ad sham ki kein kavanato. Okay, now he goes into this whole thing in Shir HaShirim, which we're going to skip, and he is going to. Okay, if you skip five lines down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in the middle of the line, he says umikol makom otan me'at she'ief charlotte samtzim katav Rashba shehayutzim me'atzumet me'am enam erva. What is the Rashba talking about? The Rashba is talking about, according to the Chatam Sofer, to those few strands of hair that it's impossible to contain, right? Anyone who has ever tried to put on a scarf or a hat knows that you, even if you're trying to cover all your hair, it's almost impossible to cover everything. He's going to explain exactly which ones he's talking about. Because they're these few strands of hair that are impossible to contain, einam erva legabe baal deragil b'henu mutar lekro kriyat shema kinegdan. Therefore, it's not considered erva. They're impossible to contain, so they're never covered. Haklal hayotze. What is his final conclusion? Kol shem seyer b'shem makom barosh ufadechet b'nisua afilu b'chadara ervahi. So the Chatam Sofer comes to his conclusion, which we may not be so surprised about based on last week's share, that every single hair on a woman's head and forehead, on a married woman's head and forehead, is considered to be erva, even within her own room. Okay, right, he's talking about the scarf that didn't necessarily cover everything, but in public you had to wear an additional hat to make sure everything was covered. Ba'anam bishura seyar shebein ozen lefadechet. The Chatam Sofer explains that what are these hairs that can't be contained? They're the hairs right here that are between your ear and your forehead that are impossible to contain because unless you wear something here and practically cover your eyes, you can't contain them. So therefore, if you're covering your whole hair, as the Chatam Sofer says is obligatory, then these little hairs that are impossible to contain are considered to be the hairs that are mitachal et samtan, are the hairs that are out of the kerchief, and therefore they're not considered erva. So as we see, the Maharal Mashankar takes the maximalist approach, right? As much hair as is out is out, whereas the Chatam Sofer says takes the most minimalist approach that, like, really only this hair is considered not to be erva. Every other strand of hair is considered to be erva. Comes Rav Moshe later, and, oh, actually, let's start with the Mishnah Berurah in source number 14. The Mishnah Berurah seems to hold like the Chatam Sofer. He says, let's skip for a moment. So he says at the end of the line, the oto me'at she'i efshar litzamtzim, those few hairs that are impossible to contain, the yotzei me'atzoma and come out of the kerchief, alzeh mekel harashba. That's what the Rashba is being mekel on, and he quotes the Chatam Sofer. I mean, this is basically a verbatim quote. Uviz Zohar, and now he quotes the Zohar that we learned last week, Parshat Naso, hechmir me'ot shelo yitra es shum seir be'isha, and he's basing himself on the Zohar that says that not one strand of hair of a woman should be seen. The Chatzav Magin Avram, derai linho kazohar, the Magin Avram said that we should practice like the Zohar. Obiyuma ita b'masa de kimchit b'skodat sniyot, right? We learned about kimchit hayatera. Okay, moving on. Rav Moshe holds very differently. Not very differently. Rav Moshe kind of takes this middle approach between the Maharal Shachar and the Chatam Sofer. The Rav Moshe explains that the din, the Da Moshe din, right, that we discussed based on the Isha Sota, is talking about her head being uncovered. And therefore, Mishum Dat Moshe, it's only a problem if her head is uncovered. We're not necessarily even talking about hair yet in the Dat Moshe requirement. And if you look at the underline in the first paragraph, Shebishvil Giloy Me'at Sarot Ein Lahachashiv Sharosh Hu Parua. If there are a few strands showing, it is not considered to be that her head is revealed, that her head is exposed. I'm just looking for the piece of paper that I denoted where I'm reading from. Give me one second. Okay, here we go. Now, if you skip two paragraphs to the fourth paragraph, V'lachin Kevan, he says, V'lachin Kevan shebedin makomon ha-mechusin, yesh bilok bein tefach lefachol mitefach. We know that the law regarding covered places of the body, we differentiate between a tefach of that covered place and less than a tefach. As long as we're not gazing for the purpose of arousal, as long as the man's just seeing generally, we differentiate between a tefach and less than a tefach. It has to be that this chiluk, that this differentiation between a tefach and less than a tefach, applies to hair as well. Because there's absolutely no reason to be more stringent on hair than the body, and if the tefach applies to the body, it should definitely apply to the hair. Dishani basar, and this is what I was referring to before. Oh, I'm sorry, I totally skipped. Now, skip to the third line at the end of the line. Dishani basar debachol hanashim hu makom b'chusa. Flesh is different because it's covered in every single woman, whether they're married or not. And it's covered in every single place. There's no difference between whether they're at home in front of other men or outside in front of other men, right? Whereas the Gemara does seem to differentiate between the two. We know that on the flesh, it's considered erva for other men, even less than a tefach. Aval b'seyar, but with hair, daha b'tulurei mechaso. But we know that with hair, single girls don't cover. V'chein b'beita ina tzricha lechaso. And also in the Gemara, we're told that she doesn't have to cover at home. L'chein, and now skip to the end of the line, ein l'hachashiv erva b'fachot mitefach. Rav Moshe comes to the conclusion that therefore, less than a tefach of exposed hair on a married woman is not considered erva. And it's not even an iser for other men. And if a woman wants to reveal or expose less than a tefach, it's fine. Why? Because seir is different. Flesh is covered all the time by every woman. Seir is not. And he even claims that the Ramah would agree with him. We actually skipped that part, but he says that the Ramah would even agree with me based on what he said, that for other men with hair specifically, it would be okay to reveal less than a tefach, because hair is a kind of lesser level than the other places on the body that are never to be exposed. Hair can be exposed up to a certain point, hair can be exposed at a certain location, therefore up to a tefach, even publicly, would be okay. And he says that the last paragraph, V'lachin ledina af shemina roi sheach miru hanashim lechaso, so now he kind of bursts our bubble, even though it would be amazing if we covered everything, kidisover hachatam sofer, as the chatam sofer, ho'il v'yatza miponya dugaon gadol kemoto, because he was a great gadol, and he said it, so it would be amazing. But it's obvious that those women who would like to be lenient, they should not at all be considered to be violating dat yehudit, which is the second level, right? Not midoraita. This is the second level of the customary practice that we discussed last week. Even dat yehudit would not be violated if she left less than a tefach. What's less than a tefach? Skip to the last line. Aval hurak erach bet etzbaot begova. It's only the value of, I'll explain in a moment, 2 fingers in height, shehapanim hu erech orech bet tzfachim around, because the face from ear to ear, basically, the hairline is about 2 tzfachim, v'yye b'tzeref pachot mitefach v'yoter asura. It should all together be less than a tefach, and more than that is asur. What does the Rav Moshe hold as a tefach? So Rav Moshe holds that a tefach is 3.6 inches, but we're talking about a square tefach here. So it's really 3.6 square inches, which is, if you want to do the math, it's 12.96 inches total. What does that mean? So since he says a woman's hairline is generally 2 tefachim in length, if it's 2 tefachim this way, then a square tefach would mean that you can only go half a tefach back. If you're not a mathematical person, trust me, if you are a mathematical person, 2 times a half is 1, so you get to 1 square tefach. So if you're 2 across and a half back, that's 1 square tefach. Okay, he says it's generally 2 etzba'ot, but Rabbi Brand explained to me that it's not just like any woman's 2 etzba'ot. It really is this, 3.6 square inches, which if you're going to hold that a hairline is 7.2 inches across this way, then that leaves you 1.8 inches, meaning half a tefach, to go back. Just to give you a sense, I measure my fingers at home, and they're 1.5 inches. I've never done this before, but they're 1.5 inches, so that would be less than a tefach. But I'd have to measure my hairline to see how the square inches would hold. I have not done that.
From where to where is one?
So it's a square tefach, really. It's like this. But on a head, he's trying to make it applicable. That, you don't go like this on a head, right? That's not how it works. So you go like that. So he's trying to explain that most women, although, again, it just depends on your hairline, most women's hairline from ear to ear is 2 tefachim, so therefore half a tefach back, that would be 1.8 inches. But again, it's 12.96 inches total, or 3.6 square inches. It's a little difficult to maintain. If you have any questions, again, ask your local Orthodox rabbi about your particular head. That is what Rav Moshe holds. So basically, just to summarize this piece of the shiur, there are three different interpretations of the Rashba. And that leads to three different practices amongst women. The Maharam al-Shakar does not seem to limit the amount of hair that can be shown under the skirt. And therefore, there are some women who will cover their heads with a hat or a scarf and then leave their hair out. The Chatam Sofer says that a woman must cover all of her hair except for these little pieces that are impossible to contain. And Rav Moshe holds that a tefach, less than a tefach really, less, because a tefach is already usur. So less than a tefach of hair can be revealed because hair is different than the rest of our bodies. Now, for the last piece, oh no, second to last piece, okay, we're going to go relatively quicker, because I know that I don't want to take your time. Keeping it under wraps or under wigs, what is the deal with shetels? So the Gemara in Shabbos in sources number 16 and Rashi in 17, we're not going to do inside. The Gemara is just discussing chutzah on Shabbos, right? Leaving the house, holding something, leaving the house, holding something without an eruv. And the Gemara uses one of the examples that they're discussing as a woman who wears a peya nachri, a woman who wears a wig of foreign hair, meaning a foreign hair's woman upon her own hair. The Shulte Giborim in source number 18 says, Mashma lahaja shimu tarok no Yisrael hikashipahen. It seems from this Mishnah that's talking about a woman going out in a sheitel that it must be okay for a woman to go out in a sheitel. Deseir beisha erva dekaamar lo heve ele beseir hadavak lebesara mamish. Because when the Gemara says Seir b'isha erva, that a woman's hair is erva, that's not talking about hair that's detached. It's only talking about hair that is attached. V'nira gam b'sara in haseir. Only when you see the flesh of her scalp along with the hair, that's what's considered erva. Aval seir hamechaseh seira in kan mishum seir b'isha erva. But when hair is covering her hair, it's not considered seir b'isha erva. V'gam lo mishum pruat rosh. It's not considered a problem of having one's hair exposed. This is the source that many say that you can cut your own hair, you know, and attach it and make it into a wig. Apparently now there's like some percentage that people say, but he's saying whether it's her own hair or another, a friend's hair that is detached and then attached to a wig. Okay, we're going to skip that. So basically, what do you say?
I'm pretty sure that my
first
says that that's
right.
Okay.
So the Shulte Giborim holds that sheitels are okay because they're not attached to her head and therefore they're not considered to be Seir B'isha Erva. And the Magen Avraham in source number 19 that we're not going to do inside says this is Mutar L'Chafila. Wearing a sheitel is 100% okay, as it discusses in the Mishnah of Shabbos. The Mishnah Brura adds really not that much. He just says that there are those who say, he says that the Rama holds that it's fine. Oh, yeah, well, okay. Let's go to the Rama. Actually, if you turn back to source number 11, we didn't do the last part of the Rama. When the Rama is talking about what's mutar, what is allowed, he says, right, the hair that comes out of their scarf is allowed. And then at the end of the line, source number 11, at the end of the second line, the kol shekein seyar nachri, how much more so the hair of a foreign woman who, you know, that she has basically put upon herself in a wig. So it seems that the Ramah paskins like the Shulte Giborim lahalacha, that a sheitel is okay. The Mishnah Brura in source number 20, which we're not going to do inside, mentions that, you know, some say that it's a problem of marat ayin, because some might think that it's their own hair, etc. And this issue of marat ayin is actually what prompted certain Hasidic sects to have their women, when they're wearing a sheitel, to also wear a little like pillbox on top of their sheitel, so that it's obvious that it's not their own hair, and that covers the issue of marat ayin according to that interpretation. However, Rav Moshe doesn't think that this whole thing is necessary. In source number 21, Hanachon lafi aniyud daiti, av she'ika man dechoshish la'asur peyad nachri bishim marat ayin, right, even though there are those who think that the sheitel is a problem of marat ayin, at the end of the line, mikol makom, rov rabotenu, v'gam me'elu she'somchini kare ha'ora'a alehem, most of our rabbis, including those who really rely upon, like the Rama and the Magen Avraham and the Prima Gadim, the Chaimash Magam Mehagra, Shesovar Kain, Shelo Asru Bazem Mishon Marat Ayin. Right, it really does seem that many of our Achronim think that a Sheitel is okay. And he continues, V'od Mishum Shebarov Upanim Nikar. He says, very often a wig is obvious, but men have no clue. So he says that doesn't count because they're not really looking that closely, or they shouldn't be. They're not looking that closely at the women. I know my husband has no clue whatsoever, couldn't care less, doesn't notice. Some men might, but he says, in general, the fact that men don't notice doesn't matter because most wigs are noticeable to most women, and that's what matters. Even though sheitels have today become much better, we can still tell. And therefore, it's not considered marit.
It doesn't matter if the guy knows, who cares if a girl knows? It's the guy that has this with erva.
But again, it's not, meaning it's not the problem. What do you say? Exactly. It's not like the din of covering your hair is the din of covering your hair. First of all, that's like inyan kriyat shema. The whole thing is it's not a problem of erva. I asked that question to, actually, when I learned this in MMY, I asked this question to Rabbi Avisha David, who is now the Rosh Hashiva of Torah Trava, and he said, lo plug. Right, there's a concept in halacha that we don't differentiate. If the women realize that it's not her real hair and therefore it's not considered erva, low plug, it doesn't matter. Right, it's a good question, but it's just that's the halachic concept that's applied to this particular area. In fact, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, as I quoted in source number 22, prefers a sheitel to other coverings. Why? Because he feels that it is harder to take off in public. Right, you can just slip off a scarf; it's not a big deal. You would never slip off a sheitel; that would just look really weird. And because it covers more hair than a scarf or hat can potentially, therefore, he actually prefers a sheitel. Very interesting. However, the famous Sephardi chief rabbi Rav Avadya Yosef is vehemently opposed to them. If you look in source number 23, he basically talks about how all these Sfaradiyot have been learning from these misguided rabbis who told them that it's okay, and I don't understand Rav Moshe because Rov Achronim say it's not okay, and therefore it's a mitzvah to publicize, especially to the Sfaradiyot, that it's a problem and they cannot wear sheitels. Recognize also that he lives in Israel. I think that, you know, has to do with it also. Meaning when you're in a completely Jewish society and everyone, it's just a little bit different hair covering back then. I think Rav Moshe also had, like, he wanted to be lenient to help women feel more like themselves. So Rav Avadya is completely against it. But one hinter he does give in source number 24 is for a divorcee or a widow, if they're having trouble in terms of finding work and they need to work, then it's okay for them to wear a wig. Rav Moshe says it might be okay for them to take off their hair covering. Rav Avadya says it might be okay for them to wear a wig. However, I do want to be intellectually honest and tell you that not all Sfardi poskim agree with Rav Avadya. So if you're Sfardi, it might be okay. Because the Yaskil Avdi, which was written by Rav Avadya Hedaya, he was a Sfardi posek who lived from 1889 to 1969. He was born in Aleppo. When he was 5, he moved to Yerushalayim. He explains, similarly to the Shelte Giborim, that the sheitels are totally fine. If you look in source number 25, he says that the Yitzhar Hara is only sholed. It only has control over living things that have life. Hair that is detached from a woman's head and then sewn into a cap and worn as a sheitel is no longer considered to be a davar chiyunit. It's no longer considered to have life, and therefore the Yitzhar Hara is not, you know, sholeit there, doesn't have control over there, and therefore he says a sheitel is fine. So, you know, there are very different opinions among what's going on. What about those women who don't cover their hair today? You know, this trend appears to have begun during the emancipation, when Jews were first permitted to integrate into general society. Certainly even 50 years ago in this country, many women in the Orthodox world, including many of our own mothers, our own grandmothers, even Rebbetzins, did not cover their hair. The question that many ask about that is, you know, is there a halachic basis for this practice? Why did so many women stop covering their hair? There was an article written several years ago by Rabbi Michael Broyd. He's a law professor at Emory University, and he is a former rabbi of the Young Israel of Toco Hills in Atlanta. He wrote this article not attempting to legitimize the practice. He still held that lahalacha, a woman needed to cover her hair. He was only trying to be melamed zchut upon women who chose not to, meaning he was trying to find any source that they could rely upon. However, his article was rebutted by many leading contemporary rabbis, including the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, Rav Mordechai Willig, and Rav Eli Baruch Shulman, as having misinterpreted many of the sources that he was quoting. I am not aware of any significant halakhic authority who agrees with his analysis or supports his conclusions. There is a sampling of Orthodox rabbis from the 20th century. For instance, Rav Yosef Masas, I gave you his little shita over there in source number 26. There's a sampling of those who attempted to justify the practice by relegating the entire din of hair covering to social conditions. Meaning, if most of society doesn't cover their hair, whether it's Jewish society or non-Jewish society, then it's okay not to. However, that would require viewing the din, the entire thing, as dat yehudit, as only being a common practice adopted by Jewish women, by Orthodox Jewish women. And it basically entails completely ignoring the original component of the halacha that's deoraita, that's the Dat Moshe component, right? Rambam considers it Zerabanan. And the Dat Moshe component is not at all subject to social conditions. And so this is really a minority opinion espoused by very few relatively unknown rabbis. In general, right, as some of you may be aware, some of you may not be, but the halachic process is one that's bound by certain rules that are given, that were really given to Moshe at the same time that he was giving Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. And we know that the very nature of Torah Shebaal Peh is that the law is subject to interpretation by various rabbis, right, who were a part of the oral tradition. The pluralistic nature of the oral law is wonderful in theory because, you know, we do believe in the validity of many different rabbis' opinions who've arrived at their opinions and conclusions through, you know, the right venues using the correct rules that were given to Moshe. However, it's difficult in practice to practice at the same time that this oven is, you know, trace that the oven is kosher, right? Which one do we do? So even though we agree that there are a plethora of opinions out there that could be potentially valid, we also need to know what to do in practice. And so when Hashem gave Moshe the Torah, he didn't only, you know, teach him the laws, but he also taught him how to derive laws, because that he knew would be important going forward when not everything would be as clear cut, and when new situations arose, and when society has changed, etc. And so therefore, Hashem provided us with you know, rules to make the system viable practically. One of those rules is that when it comes to mainstream halachic practice, we don't rely on minority opinions, right? We rely on the mainstream halachic approach. As an article written in the RJJ Journal for Halacha and Contemporary Society puts it, quote, "None of the accepted mainstream authorities ever so much as considered the legitimacy of their view. It would take us beyond the confines of this essay to explain why one should not rely on a handful of isolated sources. Suffice it to say that they have not been accepted by the halachic world." There are many mitzvot, actually, throughout Jewish history that for one reason or another were not observed. For instance, during the time of the Tosfot, actually in many communities, the men stopped wearing tefillin. I never knew that before. Rabbi Brand supplied that very interesting, historical, obviously, piece of information to me. Obviously, their lack of practice did not abrogate their obligation. Rather, the Baalei HaTosfot set out to educate the men in the communities as to what the nature of the Mitzvah Tefillin was. And Baruch Hashem, the Mitzvah Tefillin has been reinstituted as normative practice within the Orthodox Jewish communities. So in the same way, the lack of observance of the din of hair covering by women in the last century or two, depending, you know, on who you ask, doesn't negate the obligation of the practice. Just to quote the RJJ Journal again, because he puts it, I just think he puts it really well, quote, "The two major 20th century Lithuanian codes, the Mishneh Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, who we quoted before, are both clear that the hair covering requirement remains unchanged. Today, women's hair covering is seen as an objective norm throughout the halachic world, the method of which may be influenced by social change, as we discussed very much so, but not the basic requirement." However, whereas the basic requirement of hair covering does not change based on the practice of contemporary society, there are two halachot that do. One of them we already mentioned, right? The Aruch HaShulchan says that the basic requirement does not change. However, the hair status of erva might change, and therefore you can say that, you know, for a man to say Kriyat Shema today in front of a woman's hair that's uncovered is no longer considered to be a problem because so many people uncover it. So that's one law. Rav Moshe also points to the law in source number 26. You know, we learned in the Mishnah in Ketubot last week that a woman uncovering her hair is grounds for divorce. And Rav Moshe was asked the question if that's still applicable today. And so his first answer is no, because we no longer divorce a woman against her will. That's no longer part of our halachic practice. Therefore, it wouldn't be applicable today regardless. But he said, essentially, even if you just view this particular piece of it, can a woman's uncovering her hair be grounds for divorce? He says that since so many women don't today, it would not be grounds for divorce because it's no longer considered immodest in the way that it used to be considered. And so those are two halachot that are affected by contemporary practice, even though the basic requirement does not change. Those two halachot do. In conclusion, I just want to share a very interesting story that I heard from Rabbi Shalom Rosner, who has a shiur on this very topic on YU Torah. You guys can hear it from him, who heard it from Rav Schechter himself. Rav Schechter is a Rosh Yeshiva of YU. He once told a story, Rav Schechter, about when he went to Russia during, you know, in the days of the Iron Curtain. He was once giving a shiur to women. He was giving a shiur to women in Mishnayot. And he got up to the Mishnah Ketubot that we learned last time, that discusses the dinim of hair covering, right? Dat Moshe, Dat Yehudi. And one of the women asked him, what if a woman would lose her job if she covers her hair? And Rav Schechter answered, it's a lacha, right? She has to cover her hair. It doesn't matter. Even if it will cost her job. Okay, finished this year, went back to the States. 5 years later, he goes back to Russia. They asked him to go back again. This time, this same woman, he recognizes, has a big babushka on her head. He asked what happened. And she said that she was a big doctor. She didn't say she was a big doctor, probably. But it turns out she was a very, very big doctor in Russia. And she was asking the question about herself. Rav Schechter, in tears, says that he just was answering it as part of the shiur. He didn't realize that this was actually a personal question. Not that that would have changed his answer, but just interesting. When the next day she walked in, after the shiur, she walked into work with a babushka, they immediately fired her. But she was such a good doctor. She was such an amazing surgeon. They kept her on as a janitor. And they would call her in when there were big surgeries in order to guide them on what to do with the instrument. She wasn't allowed to do anything because she was no longer on the insurance, but they actually, you know, kept her on so that she could help them out. You know, all this because of that big babushka on her head. Now, that was quite a large sacrifice that this Russian woman had to make in order to cover her hair. Baruch Hashem, today in 21st century America, many of us don't face that kind of challenge. We're not worried about how our livelihood will be affected by hair covering, but still, I think we do make sacrifices. Right? Hair covering can still require sacrifice in contemporary society. As we know, as many of us have been exposed to, long, thick, flowing hair is really considered to be like one of the cornerstones of feminine beauty. At least in, you know, mainstream culture here. It's been largely influenced by the media, right? Think about Hollywood stars. Think about the last, you know, ad for a hair product that you saw in a commercial or in a magazine or even for any product that had a model, a female model advertising it. This concept of beauty being wrapped up in our hair, as Rose Weitz really goes through her entire book, has been absorbed by girls, by women. Every single female today really, you know, imbibes this cultural norm of feminine beauty being tied up with our hair. It's really hard to cover that up. You know, every generation of Jewish women has to struggle with their with a different set of challenges, right? So in the shtetls of Eastern Europe, it was dealing with, you know, these faraway mikvaot that were freezing cold or dirty. In 1950s America, it might have been, you know, keeping a kosher home. And today, one of our greatest challenges, and there are more, but I think one of the greatest challenges that Jewish Orthodox women face today is the din of covering hair, which is, I think we might have mentioned this last week, but it is so personal and yet so public at the same time. You know, part of our struggle as Orthodox Jews living in the modern world is dealing with this tension between what always was and what is. You know, preserving this tension between preserving our traditions and embracing the world as it is today. At the end of the source sheet, if you just turn to the last page, you'll see that I provided some excerpts from various women who cover their hair and contributed to Hide and Seek, Jewish Women in Hair Covering. Each one of them discusses the personal meaning that they derive from hair covering. None of their perspectives can or should be viewed as the reason for hair covering, but I think that they may convey some possible meanings that we might be able to connect to. Obviously, not all of us are going to connect to all six. I'm just hoping that, you know, each of us will be able to connect to, you know, at least one or derive meaning from at least one. You know, just to reiterate one last time, the goal of tonight's share was not to change anyone's behaviors. It was just to cover the sources that deal with this very important topic, one of the most challenging laws for Orthodox Jewish women today. All of us here tonight, regardless of what we do with our hair, have shown a dedication to being part of a community of learning, and it really has been such an honor to learn this really important topic this time, last time. I learned so much both from doing the research and from hearing your questions and your comments, and, it, you know, really just thank you for the wonderful opportunity.